Blog Talk Radio.
Anytime you have a country that refers to itself as the free world and a democracy, and at the same time has 22 million of its citizens who aren't permitted citizenship, why, that in itself reflects lunacy.
Malcolm X was a civil rights crusader, black nationalist, and Muslim minister. He was born Malcolm Little on May 19, 1925 in Omaha, Nebraska. Malcolm's father was a Baptist preacher and outspoken supporter of black activist Marcus Garvey. As a result, the Littles were frequently terrorized by white supremacist groups. Despite his family's attempts to evade harassment, young Malcolm felt the trauma of racist violence firsthand when his father was killed under mysterious circumstances. A brilliant student, Malcolm was discouraged and demeaned by white teachers, who ultimately pushed him to drop out of school at age 15. Bouncing between Boston, Flint, and Harlem during his teenage years, Malcolm turned to crime to get by. In 1946, at age 21, he was arrested for burglary and sentenced with 8 to 10 years in prison. While incarcerated, Malcolm developed a new and radical worldview based in liberation and self-determination. Through the influence of fellow prisoner John Bembury, Malcolm became an insatiable reader. He soon found himself drawn to the teachings of the Nation of Islam, a pro-black religious group led by Elijah Muhammad. Accepting his new faith, Malcolm severed ties to the past, changing his last name to X as a representation of his lost African surname. After his release on parole in 1952, he worked to develop the nation's ministry and expand its membership. In 1958, Malcolm married fellow NOI devotee, Betty Shabazz, with whom he would have 6 children. Malcolm's rapid rise in the organization mirrored the electrifying appeal of his teachings among African Americans. The wider public caught a glimpse of his movement's power one night in 1957, when Malcolm organized hundreds of black Muslims in Harlem to ensure the safety of Vincent Johnson, a hospitalized victim of police violence. Malcolm's vision of black nationalism, which did not rule out violence as a means of overcoming white oppression, was met with fear and skepticism from mainstream white audiences and quickly attracted the attention of the FBI. Still, Malcolm's role as a powerful voice in the civil rights struggle continued to build momentum. By the early 60s, however, Malcolm had grown disillusioned with the Nation of Islam after learning of Elijah Muhammad's extramarital affairs. In 1963, Malcolm publicly cut ties with the organization. Shortly thereafter, he traveled to Mecca and Cairo on a cultural journey that reaffirmed his faith and cultivated his hope for a peaceful resolution to the struggle for racial equality. Still, Malcolm X's return home was not easy. Death threats, many from followers of Elijah Muhammad, plagued him and his family. Eager to make a lasting statement, Malcolm X collaborated with writer Alex Haley on an autobiography. Sadly, he would never see the book's success. On February 21st, 1965, before a speech in Manhattan's Audubon Ballroom, Malcolm X was shot to death by 3 members of the Nation of Islam. While Malcolm's journey was cut tragically short, his words and spirit continue to shed light on the nature of inequality and the past. He remains one of the most influential figures in American history.
Thank you.
moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. When you live in a poor neighborhood, you're living in an area where you have to have poor schools. When you have poor schools, you have poor teachers. When you have poor teachers, you get a poor education. And when you get a poor education, you are destined to be a poor man and a poor woman the rest of your life. Poor education, you can only work on a poor paying job. And this poor paying job enables you to live again in a poor neighborhood. So it's a very vicious cycle. And usually these bad housing conditions result from the fact that Mr. Gray has pointed out of absentee landlords, people who are rich and live downtown and let you and I live up here in the shack. Actually, it's a form of 20th century slavery. And what you and I have to let the man know is we are peaceful people. We are loving people. We love everybody who loves us. But we don't love anybody who doesn't love us. We're nonviolent with people who are nonviolent with us. We are not nonviolent with anyone who is violent with us. And now that I have the independence of action, it's my intention to work with everybody or against everybody, whatever the case may be, to try and get some kind of immediate solution to the problems that are confronting our people. I still believe the best thing for us to do is go back home to Africa. But while we're getting ready to go back, we've got to eat now, we've got to sleep now, we have to have some clothes now, our children have to go to school, and we need some place to work. So whatever kind of action program can be devised to get us the things that are ours by right, then I'm for that kind of action no matter what the action is. I don't think when a man is being criminally treated that some criminal has the right to tell that man what tactics to use to get the criminal off his back. When a criminal starts misusing me, I am going to use whatever is necessary to get that criminal off my back. And the injustice that has been inflicted upon Negroes in this country by Uncle Sam is criminal. Don't blame a cracker in Georgia for your injustices. The government is responsible for the injustices. The government can bring these injustices to all.
If you say that you're fed up, if you teach the Negro, people don't even know their own name. Why? Because he took it away from them. Please. 20 million black people don't even know their own language. Why? Because he took it away from them. 20 million black people who don't even know the history of their ancestors. Why? Because he took it away from them. And if you try and tell them how thoroughly and completely they've been robbed, he says you're teaching hate. Today you're coming out of college. You're coming out of the leading university. You're trying to go in a good direction, but you don't know which direction to go in. And if somebody tries to take you right to the root of your problem, they say that that man's a hate teacher. If I ask why should the senators in Washington, and then again, if we tell you that Negroes are being hung on the tree or being shot down illegally, unjustly, and those Negroes should do something to protect themselves, you say you're advocating violence. The white man is tricking you. He's trapping you. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in South Vietnam. Please. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in Berlin. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he didn't say get nonviolent. He said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. But when someone attacks you, when someone comes at you with a club, when someone comes at you with a rope, when someone comes at you with a gun, despite the fact that you've done nothing, he tells you, suffer peacefully. Pray for those who use you despitefully. Be long-suffering. And how long can you suffer after suffering for 400 years? To bring about the complete independence of people of African descent here in the Western Hemisphere and first here in the United States, and bring about the freedom of these people by any means necessary. I wanted you to know that my house was bombed. It was bombed by the Black Muslim movement upon the order.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and you are listening to a special edition of New Day. And, of course, today is the day of commemoration, of observance, of what is known as our great shining black prince. Of course, we're talking about none other than Brother Malcolm X, El Haj Malik El Shabazz. And with that, in thinking about him today, we can't help but to also remember, so many things that is going on today, and then we examine what was going on when Brother Malcolm was with us. And isn't it interesting that it's the same kinds of things, perhaps even escalated some? The point is, who's speaking out today? And not just in the context of some rallies and some marches, but who is really trying to bring about a plan of action? Well, we're going to talk about that tonight and tomorrow and also Saturday to examine, of course, the history, the legacy of Malcolm X, but also to look at it in the context of what's going on today. Now, this is a wonderful and very interesting time for those who are kind of into astrology or astronomy. Very recently, we saw a lunar eclipse that also was a red moon. And it's interesting when you kind of get into the energy of some of that. But also, in these past days, there's a lot of history that is relevant to our people in this past week. And so on Saturday's program, we're going to talk about the release of the album, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. It came out in 1971 on May the 21st. And so we're going to kind of tie this thing in to this past week, the kind of energy that we are kind of sensing and feeling this past week, some good, some not so good, but nevertheless still has to be examined, still has to be kind of understood to a greater extent, because we need to really examine everything we possibly can in our midst. The other thing we're going to talk about a little tonight, but definitely tomorrow night and Saturday, is this past week there was a hearing. And the hearing was to examine the cells of Henry Adam Lacks. So with that said, going back to Brother Malcolm, and this is one of my favorite clips, because I keep raising this to brothers. I was out at the Malcolm X event today, and I said to a few brothers today, what are our men doing in our communities to better protect, to help better protect and defend the black woman? And needless to say, there weren't many responses to that. Why is that? Why is it in any black community, for the most part, if you go to particularly men's groups, organizations, they have no real plan of action that addresses the issue of now the increased kidnapping, molestation, needless to say, exploitation, but certainly rape. In our communities, we're now looking at sex trafficking that is off the hook. But yet, where is any plan of action in our community to address that? We've got to begin to ask these questions so that we are clearer on who is really who and what is really what. With that said, And again, this is one of my favorite clips from Brother Malcolm, but he, as he often said, make it plain, and he did in this statement.
Respected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. We will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in the direction of our women.
So now, with that said, family, we have to ask ourselves, where is the plan of action that is geared to addressing some of the issues in our community that is actually relevant to our women and girls? Again, we're going to talk more about that in the next couple of days, but when I'm looking again at some of the other areas that Brother Malcolm represented quite well, and that, of course, was black manhood. Black manhood. Now, on Saturday's program, we're going to talk with Brother Omowale Africa, who, you know, has done several sessions in addressing the issues of the lack of shall we say, qualitative black manhood, but also in examining how we're seeing the what some call the feminization of the black man, and how many are kind of not only allowing it, but also kind of buying into it by not speaking out, by not making things clearer. And certainly we are seeing a lot of examples today. And so we have to ask ourselves, where are our brothers in the way of really demonstrating the kind of courage, the kind of resistance that we once saw? Big ups to the Black Panther Party, the Republic of New Africa, the Black Liberation Army. During that time period, those brothers, if nothing else, they definitely were not punks. That's for sure. And it wasn't about just waiting until you saw a crisis. It wasn't just them waiting when someone was killed, a cop killed one of us. There was an ongoing strategic modes of operation in addressing the injustices in this country against our people. And so, again, where is it today? Well, why has this happened? Well, we're going to examine some of that, including how churches have now bought into pacifying or lessening a more, if not radical, a more strategic approach that doesn't just represent, you know, kind of bowing down and just some marches or just some rallies. And I'm not saying marches and rallies are not, you know, a part of movement or of some necessity. But what else? Where are our security forces? And why is it that we only see certain kinds of things when there is a murder or some other kind of violence that has been perpetuated against us? Again, we want to begin to examine that. We're going to ask the question tonight, tomorrow, and on Saturday's program. Will real black men please stand up in the kind of way that Brother Malcolm did, in the kind of way that Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad did? Where are they at today? So before we go any further, we want to play another clip by Brother Malcolm. And again, this one, again, gives you some insight into, you know, women. What he thought about or what he had said about the education, for example, of our women. Now, you know, we've heard a lot of backlash over the years But at the same time, we want to make sure that you kind of hear what Brother Malcolm had to say about our women and education. All right? Check this out.
That I am aware of in my traveling recently to Africa and the Middle East. In every country that you go to, usually the degree of progress can never be separated from the woman. If you're in a country that's progressive, the woman is progressive. If you're in a country that reflects a consciousness toward the importance of education, it's because the woman is aware of the importance of education. But in every backward country, you'll find the women are backward. And in every country where education is not stressed, it's because the women don't have education. So one of the things I became thoroughly convinced of in my recent travels is the importance of giving freedom to the woman, giving her education, and giving her the incentive to get out there and put that same spirit and understanding in the children. And I frankly am proud of the contribution that our women have made in the struggle for freedom. And I'm one person who's for giving them all of the leeway possible because they've made a greater contribution than many of us men. And one of the best ways that they can help is to encourage the man, try and inspire him to be more militant and turn him away from being nonviolent and passive and meek and Uncle Tomish. Make him aware that the black woman wants to see her man be a man instead of around here using religion as an excuse to be a coward and some of the things that he's been reflecting here lately.
Freedom by any means necessary was the battle slogan of Malcolm X, for he knew that in America, the condition of the vast majority of the 22 million black people is very close to the condition of 11 million Africans under the fascist South African regime.
All right. So there again, family, you know, those are some of the kind of areas or things that you don't really hear a lot about when it comes to Brother Malcolm. You oftentimes hear, you know, by any means necessary, the ballot and the bullet and other things in regards to Brother Malcolm. But you often do not hear his position about our women. I think that particular clip really pointed out, you know, some very precise kinds of things in making certain that he gave his opinion about the input, the kind of accomplishments of women, our women, and how necessary it was or is then and now in terms of what women can do. And no, again, this is what we're finding today. I oftentimes hear conversations, you know, that lends to, you know, our women are more kind of capable of getting a job than black men, and that the woman is being used to lessen the brothers and all of that. And, you know, we're going to have to really sit down and examine some of that and really see, is that really the reason why certain things are not happening? Now, I'm not just, you know, I'm not saying that that doesn't play a role to some degree, but is it to the extent that some are saying, or is there some other things going on? Well, we're going to begin to examine some of those things in a bit more critique kind of manner as we proceed as well. Before we bring in Brother Mike, who is going to give us a report on today's event that happened in New York, of course, every year there is a pilgrimage to the gravesite of Malcolm X. And for the past couple of years, I think they were not able to do it because of the COVID, but they were, in fact, able to do it today. And there was definitely a wonderful activity, a wonderful spirited event that took place today in New York, as it has been for over 50 years. So Brother Mike will be calling in shortly to share with us information about what went on today. And right now, they're probably still at the, if not Schomburg, the Shabazz Center. I think that's where they're at presently for the actual event. There's usually a conference or some other things going on after they do the day activity and commemoration of Malcolm X. Okay, but before we bring in Brother Mike, what we're going to do is play some clips from the very last that Brother Malcolm gave. And hold on one moment. Let me cue that up for you. And, okay, this is it. Oops, hold on. Sorry, that's the wrong one. Let me try again. Here we are.
Hebrew, you probably call him Jehovah too. If you can understand Arabic, you probably call him Allah. But since the white man, your friend, took your language away from you during slavery, the only language you know is his language, you know, your friend's language. So you call him, you call for the same God he calls for. When he's putting a rope around your neck, you call for God, he calls for God. And you wonder why the one you call on never answers. So that once you realize that I believe in the supreme being who created the universe and believe in him as being one, I also have been taught in Islam that that one God who only has one religion, and that religion is called Islam. All of the prophets who came from us taught that religion. Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, all of them. And by believing in one God and one religion and all of the prophets, it creates unity. There's no room for argument, no need for us to be arguing with each other. And also in that religion, of the real religion of Islam. When I was in the Black Muslim movement, I didn't have the real religion of Islam in that movement. It was something else. And but the real religion of Islam doesn't teach anyone to judge another human being by the color of his skin. The yardstick that is used by the Muslim to measure another man is not the man's color, but the man's deeds, the man's conscious behavior, the man's intention. And when you use that as a standard of measurement or judgment, you never go wrong. But when you just judge a man because of the color of his skin, then you're committing a crime, because that's the worst kind of judgment. If you judge him just because he was a Jew, that's not as bad as judging him because he's black. Because a Jew can hide his religion. He can say he's something else, which a lot of them do that. They say they're something else. But the black man can't hide. When they start indicting us because of our color, that means we're indicted before we're born, which is the worst kind of crime that can be committed. And the Muslim religion has eliminated all tendencies to judge a man according to the color of his skin, but rather the judgment is based upon his, and when prior to going to into the Muslim world, Elijah Muhammad had taught us that the white man could not enter into Mecca in Arabia, and all of us who followed him, we believed it, and he said.
Okay, so you've heard now, I guess you could say, some of the contrasts in the fiery, the more radical, what have you, Brother Malcolm, in some of the earlier years, and that was excerpts from his last speech. So now you can kind of hear some of what has happened over the past years in terms of critiquing his life and for some, you know, seeing or feeling that he developed into, you know, this other phase of his life, which of course was taken away, you know, far, far too soon. So again, I wanted to kind of show you the difference in if not presentation, in some of the analysis or some of the information that was that have been looked at over the years, in certain circles, of course, in more scholarly circles, and even in more political circles, these are the types of things that have been said, have led to people moving into other realms of Islam, for example. They use the clip that you just heard to kind of give some indication as to why they move from one kind of mindset or frame of interaction to another, utilizing Brother Malcolm's concept or what he just more or less conveyed in terms of, you know, what his philosophy or thoughts were at that particular time. About, you know, certain issues or certain things that he had been taught previously. So the point is, for those that do not know, these are some of the areas of debate that, of course, is still being talked about or evaluated today. Nevertheless, there were some things that did, in fact, remain pretty much intact. And those are some of the things that we want to begin to look more at. And needless to say, the issue of self-determination, do for self, remained with Brother Malcolm throughout his life until the very end of his life. For those that do not know, of course, when he was formulating the Organization for Afro-American Unity, one of the some of the principles in that was, in fact, again, self-determination, black nationalism, and of course, self-defense. So those are some of the things we're going to talk about in the next couple of days, family. What we're going to do now is get ready to talk with Brother Mike Gray, who, of course, did in fact attend today's program, today's activity, which, of course, is annual, over 50 years. Again, I think for the past 2 years, of course, due to the COVID situation for unable to go out to the grave site in the way that, you know, folks normally was. It used to be, you know, several hundred people would be going to the grave site for the pilgrimage every year. And so, you know, things are kind of getting back to normal. And so Brother Mike is going to kind of give us some insight into what happened today. I can tell you, I've gone on several occasions. It's an experience that you do not forget. There's a spirit that happens that is amongst the people on this day in going to the cemetery. Of course, Dr. Khaled is also buried there along with several others that we know. Let me see. I think Paul Robeson is buried at the same cemetery as well. But anyway, let's go to our live line and let's talk with Brother Mike and get a report on, you know, what he was able to participate in today, the spirit that was always, always amongst people, and certainly on this day in commemorating the great Malcolm X. Again, we always want to, you know, plug in or tap into the energy, particularly those things that have a level of consistency that is so, so very important in this day and age. Anyway, let's go to our live line and talk with our brother Mike Gray. Hey, Brother Mike, how are you this evening?
Fine. How are you, Sister Andrews?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Always, particularly on a day like this, in remembering one of our great ancestors and certainly, you know, giving as much honor and props as we possibly can by way of our radio program. So how was today for you, Brother Mike?
I think it was an excellent day. Certainly it started out, you know, rather inclement. It was raining. But as the day progressed, by the time we started, it had stopped raining, and as the program went on, it just got better and better, and the rain never came back. So it ended up being really nice, and that was sort of indicative of the spirit that was there, because it just got better and better, you know. It was just one of them things that you have to be there, because, you know, so many of us just take it really serious and make it important to be there if we physically can. And those that could stand and those that could make it there made it. It was good. You know, you had, Dr. Jeffries, you know, you had Dr. Rosalind Jeffries, as well as Lynn Jeffries, and of course you had Professor Smalls and so many others. Some people who actually soldiered at that time with Malcolm in Muslim Monks Incorporated, as well as the the African American, you know, African union, you know. So it was a nice mixture, very nice, and people were drawing on memories of Malcolm. I thought that Professor Smalls pointed out how, you know, even though prevailing wisdom, many might say that he was assassinated by the nation, but Professor Smalls was just pointing out the interest in the highest levels of this government and the role that it played on that day, and got into a little bit of how very people was very close to Malcolm that was watching his back over that last year, how they strangely were absent on that day, and how so many people were arrested over that last week, or two, and was shipped to various locations in the country. And ultimately, those that Malcolm had the understanding would be watching his back, they were ultimately not present because of the government participation in the actual assassination attempt. And it was interesting that how Professor Smalls pointed out that the gangster Bumpy Johnson was one of the people that was watching Malcolm's back. The Bumpy Johnson that actually lived. I don't know. I haven't seen those Netflix or whatever programs what they're pitching about Bumpy Johnson. So I don't know how people perceive Bumpy Johnson, but the fact that he was an organized crime figure in Harlem, I mean, that part is true, but, you know, he had a friendship for Malcolm and had the power to nip so many of the things that was endangering Malcolm in the bud if he wanted to. And Malcolm didn't want a bloodshed on his behalf, and he was easily able to point out how Malcolm was being followed and tracked by certain forces, and he told Malcolm he could handle that. But, you know, Malcolm was telling him, no, we don't want any bloodshed. But on that, or those last few days, strangely, so many people got picked up. The people that actually Malcolm envisioned watching his back. And that's what Small said that and brought that out, which was some very important points that's not shown. Let's say if people watch the Malcolm movie, and the education from Malcolm has so much depending on either the autobiography or the actual Spike Lee movie. Professor Small talked about things that really that the movie or the book didn't cover. So you got a real education by things that was going on at that time that we didn't know.
Right. Wow. It's really good, you know. I love to hear Professor Small when he, you know, talks about the history of Brother Malcolm. And, of course, you know, he had a good relationship, or not just a good relationship, a close relationship with Malcolm X's sister. And, you know, he oftentimes speaks about that because he used to do security for Malcolm X's sister, Ella. And, you know, again, I think it's so important that we, you know, talk about the type of man, the type of black man that Brother Malcolm always exemplified, because, again, in this day and age, we are seeing, you know, what often people call the feminization of our men all over the country, and it's so acceptable. So again, you know, to see the brothers in their demeanor. Again, you know, I've had the opportunity to go on a few occasions for the annual pilgrimage, and to see those black men that, you know, participate and that come to that program. I mean, it is just so, like you said, the spirit is just so obvious, and so you can feel it. I mean, you can literally feel that kind of not just, you know, seriousness, but that kind of statute of black men, you know, at that program. So, wow, I'm really glad to hear that, you know, that again, we're able to start kind of getting back to the kinds of celebrations or the kinds of gatherings that we used to have before COVID.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that Sister Jeffries, oh man, she ended it rather strong with a rousing speech about spirituality and talking about the contribution of women, Sister Betty and others. Oh, she was something else. Dr. Rosalind Jeffries, that might, those that might not know, is the wife of Dr. Leonard Jeffries, certainly a world-renowned historian, organizer, Pan-Africanist. And basically, all of their messages were about the contribution of Malcolm, and that Pan-Africanism and how important that is, which everybody that spoke basically talked about just how important that is, and how Malcolm exemplified that so much, and that we're not there. And the main point was to emphasize we're not praising Malcolm as if he is a deity, or that he was perfect or anything like that, but that Malcolm represented a level of manhood that we should all aspire towards. So basically, Sister Rosalind, Dr. Rosalind Jeffries, I should call her by title, just that I'm just very familiar with her, so I call her Sister Rosalind. But Dr. Rosalind Jeffries, penetrating insights on just how Malcolm conducted his life and how important for us to develop a type of kinship that is so necessary in these times, and that how man and woman, that whole balance of Maayat, you know, truth and justice, and just how important that is now. So it was that kind of spirit that's rekindled. And for me personally, I think we've always developed those types of Malcolms. I think that certainly when you think of some of the pioneers that preceded Malcolm, they were strong in their own right. So it's not like we waited around for centuries for this Malcolm. We've had plenty of Malcolms, and certainly the same way you see that spirit of supreme confidence and no fear, like you would get in a Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. You know, you had that in Martin Delaney.
Right.
So, you know, we've always had those types.
Right.
We've always developed these types of individuals that truly could function either without fear, or those that if they did have fear, was able to overcome the fear and become the person that they were meant to be. So that's the encouraging part, that we all potentially can be Malcolm. We can all overcome certain fears, and we should all know and be clear on who the enemy is.
That's right. Brother Mike, with that said, I want you to stay right there. I want to just share with our family the words of Baba Ossie Davis, because I think what you just said kind of capitalizes also and exemplifies what he says in the eulogy. For those who are not familiar with it, I just want to take a few moments to share it with you at this point.
Hold on. There we go. Oops. Let's try that again. There we go. Hold up. There.
At this final hour, in this quiet place, Harlem has come to bid farewell to one of its brightest hopes, extinguished now and gone from us forever. It is not in the memory of man that this immediate, unfortunate, but nonetheless proud community has found a braver, more gallant young champion than this Afro-American who lies before us, unconquered still. I say the word again as you would want me to, Afro-American. Afro-American Malcolm. Malcolm had stopped being Negro years ago. It had become too small, too puny, too weak a word for him. Malcolm was bigger than that. Malcolm had become an Afro-American. And he wanted so desperately that we, that all his people, would become Afro-Americans too. There are those who still consider it their duty, as friends of the Negro people, to tell us to revile him, to flee even from the presence of his memory, to save ourselves by writing him out of the history of our turbulent times, and we will smile. They will say that he is of hate, a fanatic, a racist, who can only bring evil to the cause for which you struggle. And we will answer and say unto them, did you ever talk to Brother Malcolm? Did you ever touch him or have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him?
You haven't done the right thing.
Was he ever himself associated with violence or any public disturbance? For if you did, you would know him. And if you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people. And in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves. However much we may have differed with him or with each other about him and his value as a man, let his going from us serve only to bring us together now. Consigning these mortal remains to earth, the common mother of all, securing the knowledge that what we place in the ground is no more now a man, but a seed, which after the winter of our discontent will come forth again to meet us, and we shall know him then for what he was and is, a prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
Until today, May 19th.
All right. Again, that was the actual eulogy that Baba Ossie Davis gave at the time of the funeral for El-Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, and that's where the phrase came from. That you sometimes hear people say, our shining black prince. And as Brother Mike just said, you know, this is the kind of characteristic that we've seen with black men over the decades, over the centuries, you know, from Nat Turner to, you know, so many others that we can talk about and will talk about. But again, today, May 19th, we're talking about Malcolm X. Woo! All right, Brother Mike. So, again, with all of that said, I'm glad you were able to share with the family, you know, some of what went on today, some of the happenings for today, as it has been for what year is this, Brother Mike?
I think this is year 56.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wait, 65, 35, and 22, 57.
Okay, yes, yes, yes. And so, again, family, for 57 years, straight years, I think, you know, they might have missed the physical one maybe the year before last due to the COVID.
Oh, no, we were there.
We were there.
Really? It was just a small amount of us. No buses.
Okay.
No buses. Just,
wow.
You know, we kept it small, but we were there.
Right. Okay. Wow. I know that's right. All right. 57 straight years. And again, you know, when you talk with Dr. Professor Smalls, you know, he always makes it very clear that, you know, that was something that Brother Malcolm's sister had requested that they do, and they had upheld it, you know, every year. So, wow. This is what we're talking about. Consistency is so important. Brother Mike, I went to an event today here in Philly. It was at Malcolm X Park, by the way, but it was also, of course, a commemoration, a tribute. And it just kind of, it's a little disheartening when you hear particularly the younger folks talk as if, you know, certain things haven't happened. You know, it's almost as if it's the right now, you know, that they're talking about, that they're making reference to. You know, you oftentimes hear, well, you know, we need to come together and we need to just start formulating this and formulating that. But, you know, as if this had not been done before, you know. And so I keep asking folks, what is the plan? You know, we keep talking about we need to unite, or we need to do this. We do, and then when I ask, but do you have a plan or something that you want to propose as some suggestions as to how we're going to do that? And that's where the conversation tends to, you know, not exist any longer.
Right, right.
So, you know,
well,
we've got to – go ahead, Brother Mike.
I was going to say that it just, we have been so splintered because the attack has been so consistent. And the attack has been on every level one can imagine, psychologically, educationally, economically, physically, what you saw just happened. In Buffalo, that's not accidental. That's not happenstance. If you go back to what happened in Charleston, South Carolina, a few years ago during the Obama administration, if you just look at everything, whether it's in Wilmington in 1898, Rosewood, you know, Black Wall Street, you know, all of these things, they're not happenstance. These things are calculated, and it's done with intent at various times. And the plain, you know, when all is said and done, the plain thing is fear. You know, there's a latent fear that so many of us have, and there's a level of confusion that quite naturally with a lack of a real political and cultural education that, you know, we come to the table scarred and many times confused and lack the understanding. And so some of us find ourselves in a camp where we can't work with other people. We don't know why, but we will find every excuse under the sun not to work with each other. And we don't understand that this enemy that we're going up against, there has to be unity. And, you know, whether it was Gary, Indiana 50 years ago, they at least came out of that,
right,
out of that convention, understanding you can have unity without uniformity.
Right, that's right.
So you can work on the things that you could work with in others, and as Marcus Garvey said, the conditions will make you do what you normally would not do. So I think ultimately, I think we're going to work out a lot of basic things that we need to work out. Certainly religion, political affiliation, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, even though most of us, I'm sure that numbers would show that we're well over 90% Democrats, and some of us put so much in that basket. And if you don't prioritize black first or black only, you're going to lose. I could tell you that right now. If you don't have the cultural understanding to understand our similar history, whether you're from Africa, the continent itself, whether you and your family has been here the last 3-4 centuries, or whether you're from the Caribbean and identify with that part of the African diaspora, if we are not united and don't have a real sense of cultural unity, I can tell you right now, with what we up against, there's no way you can win. You know, it just can't happen. You know, this is why Dr. Clark used the words Pan-Africanism or perish. You have to inhale Pan-Africanism and exhale Pan-Africanism. Inhale and exhale it all day long. There's no other way out of this. There's no other way out of this. And we should not let basic things, whether it's, like I said, religion, whether it's economic conditions and culture or lack thereof, keep us apart. Because the more you do that, because it's going to take all hands on deck, and even though major movements have occurred with probably 10% or even less sometimes of our people at the helm, you're not going to beat this enemy that is it's an intractable foe. That's the way I'll describe the white man. He's an intractable foe that always finds a way to put his foot on our throats. And the same way you could see the implications in Buffalo, this has been our history throughout. How they can look at one individual and know full well he's associated with various organizations and connections. Which they can't even say he's not connected this time. So whether it's him or whether it's a Dylann Roof in South Carolina, or shooters that have done all these things, I think the common term they use now is lone wolves. There's no such thing as a lone wolf, a white guy. When you are identifying with those who preceded you and you have connections, and the government consistently refuses to go into emails, go into your phone, find out what all that history and these connections and affiliations are, because they're not serious of going after white militias, white hate groups, because they're all a part of that, and they are in agreement with so much of what they do. So, you know, Satan can't cast out Satan.
I know that's right.
So,
wow.
So that's
stay
where
right
we at.
There. I see. I think a brother Ray Ray is in queue. I'm going to bring him in next. But before I do, I want to share this little tippet with you all and get your thoughts on it. And when we opened up earlier, we played, of course, one of Brother Malcolm's clips that I always love, and that is when he talks about the black woman being the most disrespected entity on the planet. So I want to share what happened this week briefly, and we'll talk more about it later on Saturday's program, but check this out.
Moment in history, and I'm so glad that our family finally is getting the justice we so truly deserve.
They are claiming unjust enrichment by Thermo Fisher Scientific Incorporated, a company using Lax's cell line to make products and profit.
Henrietta lives as long as her cells live. And each time there is a regeneration and selling for profit and commercialization of these cells, the statute of limitations starts all over again.
But Thermo Fisher wants the case dismissed, claiming the statute of limitations ran out long ago. 11 News has reported on the treatment Lax received as a patient at Johns Hopkins Hospital in 1951, how she suffered from cervical cancer and doctors took tissue from her without permission. Now known as HeLa cells, they are used in scientific research. They've helped develop polio and COVID vaccine.
I think with all the things where her cell had done, I think it's going to be a lot different because she got more recognition now. And everybody out there knows this is a historic thing.
The attorney representing Thermo Fisher does not dispute the cell's benefits, telling the judge, I'm sorry for Mrs. Lax's experience at Johns Hopkins. It's not lost on me and my client. But adding that the company had nothing to do with this conduct and many companies worldwide are using the cells. This is an open commercial practice. And there is no law against Thermo Fisher cultivating the HeLa cell line. But attorneys for the family say billions are being made without the family receiving any compensation, and other companies will also be sued.
They're not going to be alone that long. They shouldn't get all worried about that. And, you know, the idea that they're being picked on, that's just so obviously ridiculous.
No ruling by the judge just yet. She is considering the arguments on both sides and will then determine if the case should be dismissed or can move forward. Reporting from downtown Baltimore, Barry Sims, WBAL-TV, 11 News.
Okay, so here we are. Now, this just happened this week, family. The case of, again, an ancestor, Henrietta Lacks, whose cells were taken without her knowledge, as I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, are aware. It's still being used today by several pharmaceutical companies. Now, what you just heard now, of course, is the companies are saying that the statute of limitations is over and that this is a did you hear that? It's a common practice, right? So I'm going to go back to Brother Mike, and I'm going to bring Brother Ray Ray in as well. Again, Brother Mike, you hear this madness? These people, they have no remorse, no sense of morality, nothing. You know, I had the audacity to say that, you know, they feel a little sad about what happened, but that's it. Clearly.
Well, look, Dr. Clark used to always talk about Africa has what the world desires, but's not willing to pay for. So he's basically saying that the white man is the white man, and anything he sees, if he wants it, he takes it. So those cells that are life-giving and that these are from the original woman of the planet,
yep,
they found in her the origin of mankind. This is her cells literally cannot die. They found the life-giving, how enriched her blood was, and you could trace that straight back to Africa to the beginning of mankind itself in this black woman. So when they use a term like, well, it's common practice that they do that, well, is it common practice that you do something without permission? You take something out of somebody's body And you don't even
right.
have the common decency once you find out how wondrous it is, how wonderful, how great and fantastic the discovery is. You mean you can't compensate the family even in her death?
Wow.
And then you say, well, it's just the way things are done. What kind of beast are you?
That's right.
And her family has to work now for the rest of their lives and will not be compensated because you say, well, this is common practice. That don't mean that it's right. Now, you know, a black person can be killed by a police officer and never compensated, never given their day in court. A black woman can be raped. You know, going back to what Malcolm said with respect to the black woman not being protected and respected by the world, a black woman can be raped. Well, how many legal cases are on the books where you could say that a white person went to jail for raping a black woman, yet we are every complexion under the sun? It is unheard of for a black, for a white man to be jailed and imprisoned for years for raping a black woman. So he's always felt the black woman is his to do whatever he wants to do with her body. So they're looking at Henrietta Lacks like, well, this ain't no big deal. We've raped and killed y'all for centuries, and y'all get mad that we took some cells that we found out were incredible from her body? So I can understand them saying, well, what y'all mad at? You know, because you ain't getting mad and every black woman that's said for the last five centuries they were raped by a white man, they were all lying, all of them. Every black woman that said that a white man raped them is a pathological liar.
That's right.
Now, somebody's lying. Either every black woman made up the story or white men are rapists. You know, so something happened because if a black man did anything near what they are accused of doing, that black man is dead. And we ain't even talking about a trial where you are judged by the jury of your peers. We're talking about old country justice. They just snatch
right.
your behind
right.
up, take you somewhere and hang you after they talk all that stuff to you and beat the hell out of you. They just outright kill you and leave your body as a living warning, leave you hung up and strung up, and that's all done right after church with
so
the congregation
family,
and the pastor there and everything.
That's right. So, Brother Mike, let me say this. For Saturday's program, if the judge has not made a decision in favor of the family, we will be ready to start a letter campaign as well as phone calls or whatever. We have the judge's name presently, and we're working on getting the other contact information. So for those who don't know, the judge's name is Deborah Boardman. And again, it says in Baltimore, Judge Deborah Boardman is her name. The case is before her. She's still considering the dismissal of the case by the pharmaceutical company. And the name of the pharmaceutical company is Thermo Fisher Scientific, Inc. And so we'll also be doing research to find out what other products they produce. Because, again, Stanley, we've got to start looking at what actions can we take. This might be a company that is producing products that we are purchasing. So we're going to look to see what they actually do other than what we know they do, and that is to use the cells of our ancestor. But, again, for Saturday's program, we'll be able to give you more information with action. See, that's what we're talking about. We don't want to just give you information. We want to also propose or bring forward some action steps. So, again, by Saturday's program, we'll have additional information for you in terms of if a decision has been made, if we need to look at doing any kinds of follow-up. And, again, even if it's just a letter, even if it's just phone calls, these are things that folk can do and should do. So I just wanted to kind of give you that little sidebar. But like Brother Mike just said,
These people do not care about us. We know this by now. But again, in the spirit of Brother Malcolm, we need to start taking more action. Brother Mike, stay right there. I'm going to bring Brother Ray Ray in. Did he make it too? Well, he'll tell us if he made it out to the event today. Hey, Brother Ray Ray.
Oh, hello, 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 Philadelphia. Hello, Sister Filet. Yeah, we made it out there today. You know, the weather was rained all day last night. But after the Mackey's lecture, Brother Charles was excellent. You know, Dr. J couldn't make it, so Brother Charles came in and pinch hitter and did an excellent job. That that lecture will be on YouTube and probably tomorrow or the day after. But we made it out there in an excellent program. The E-Man from Detroit was there. He always comes. I forgot his name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And festivities was good. And
Brother Ray,
came
did you
on
go
back.
To any of the after program? Did you go to the after program?
No, they had a whole bunch of after programs. It's on the 25th Street, December 12th, they did their thing, you know, to
right,
shut
yeah,
down.
Yeah, that's
and,
what I was talking about, right.
Yeah, they had a whole bunch of events going on. And
okay.
That, you know, it was the typical Malcolm's birthday thing, you know, and we got to see if we could keep it going and follow what he was doing, but... I was wondering, I wonder what his statement would be on this COVID. Wonder what his statement would be.
I wonder what his statement would be with the last murders. Last
weekend. Well, his speeches, you know, he has, you know, what he has said in the past through his speeches and his actions. The murders goes on us to follow what he wanted to do, but you know, all the civil rights leaders never honor Malcolm X. You know, they out there trying to the gatekeepers. They working for the gatekeepers, so they ain't doing nothing like that.
But
you know,
but see, Brother Ray Ray, again, I don't expect them to do anything
right.
Anywhere. This stage of the game, I don't expect them.
I want
to hear Brother Malcolm's words, and then we have to ask ourselves, what are we doing that represents what he taught and what he spoke of? And again, for example, check this out.
Well, for the past 10 years, the struggle in America has been confined to what has been projected to the public as a civil rights struggle. And in that context, it has remained a domestic problem. It has remained within the jurisdiction of the United States. And it has, and as such, it has been impossible for the Afro-American, for American Negroes, to try and enlist the support of other dark-skinned people who are being oppressed the world over in that struggle. And the difference now in the direction that the struggle is taking, from the direction that the struggle has been going in the past, there are many of our people who are thinking more deeply and more broadly and are beginning to see the importance of lifting it out of the national context or out of the domestic context or beyond the jurisdiction of the United States government. And the only way this can be done is by internationalizing the problem and putting it at a level where it can be taken into the United Nations, and then all of the other independent nations on this earth can involve themselves in our struggle and support us. And the only way by which this can be done, instead of it being called civil rights in the future, we're going to have to label it a human rights struggle or the struggle for human rights. And
okay, now here we are. Brother said very clearly that we've got
back
to
then,
go from the civil rights, and this is 1964. So here we are in 2022,
and
yet
same stuff
we're
is
not
happening.
Hearing amongst us this idea of human rights, us fighting for, or at least using even the language of that? What, brother, and brother Mike, you as well, why is this? Why are, see, we have no expectation or shouldn't have any expectation of, you know, these various people who, so-called civil rights leaders or what. We already know what they're about, what they're going to do, what they're not going to do. But at the same time, where is the representation for us today that's talking beyond that or more than that?
Well, the CIA, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the jackals that control outside, they keep their mouth closed.
No, I'm talking about amongst us, amongst our people. Where is the representation?
The representation is in the grassroots. The representation is in the grassroots that we still do what we do because you still do what you do. You don't have to.
Well,
you don't have to come
on. I agree with Brother Ray Ray because, and I understand what you're saying, Sister Empress, that we should not expect civil rights organizations that feed from the trough of white people, how do we expect them to fight the very people that feed them and give them the lifestyle that they enjoy? So, you know, most of the civil rights leaders are all millionaires. Now, most of us don't know that, but they're all millionaires. Sharpton, Jesse, and so many others, they're all millionaires.
They gave
and
right.
You can't
those
expect
people.
And
those
you can't expect.
Yeah, Mike.
So you can't expect. There's some noise in the background. I don't know what's going on, but anyway, you can't expect them to bite the hand that feeds them, and then you have to consider that at the same time, the role of the average person. The average black person that's concerned or committed to our struggle, their value has been minimized. You would never see a Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. You would never see his type on a nationally syndicated program elucidating ideas or where we should go. It is strictly condemnation. That's why his name is very rarely ever even mentioned, because it's only when it serves to in a disfavorable context. So the fighters, those who, whether it's Dr. Francis Quest Welsing, one of the most brilliant minds we've ever produced, or Dr. Amos Wilson, what the things that they pointed out, you would never see them on MSNBC, CNN, talking about our level of struggle and what we must do. You would never see that. You look at the people that are nationally syndicated and have a worldwide forum. Why were they given this? Who carved that out? Did they carve that out themselves, or was that given to them based on a level of loyalty? And we would say, why? Tawana Brawley's rape caused United African Movement to be formed. Most people don't know that. UAM was formed because of the rape and kidnapping of Tawana Brawley. The white man would tell you to this day that that was a hoax. But we came together because a 15-year-old girl was raped by six white men. Now, who even mentions that? That's why, and it went worldwide, that saying, no justice, no peace, comes from Alton Maddox, not from Reverend Sharpton, the millionaire.
Right.
But most of us don't know that. They say no justice,
no peace from them. You don't hear that from them. The gatekeepers gave Harlem to a Dominican. And if you go up in Washington Heights.
Brother, you have to say the name. No, nobody knows who you're talking about.
Yancy Rodriguez. Yancy Rodriguez, the council person that represents Washington Heights. Eric Adams gave him a $243,000 transportation job.
Okay, because you confused me, because I thought you was talking about Charlie Rangel, who is Dominican. They gave it to him when they destroyed Adam Clayton Powell Jr., if you want to know.
That was back then. But on the flip side, they gave it to another Dominican. Washington Heights belongs to Yancy Rodriguez.
No, it belongs to Espaillat. But go, I know what you're saying, but it's really Espaillat,
and now the transportation under the favor of Adams, he gave them the patronage job. They will deliver the vote. They can peddle in Washington Heights all kind of goods on the corner. In the underground economy in Washington Heights, where you can't peddle nothing on 125th.
Right.
Without
right.
problems.
They did something similar here in Philly. But let me just do a sidebar real quick, because, again, and these are some other areas that we're going to have to really elaborate on at some point. See, all of these people that we talk about, they have clear motor operandums. Meaning they're either coming out of the political party, Democrat, Republican, whatever, or they're coming out of the church. So my point is, like Brother Mike mentioned earlier, that I think he said it was Dr. J, oftentimes talks about, as well as Professor Small, Pan-Africanism. So when do we get to the point of breaking that down for modes of operations? Because these other people that we're talking about that are maneuvering, they have clear-cut things that they got goals, objectives, and then they make it very clear how they get ready to do it. So now, let's get with us, because this is one of the problems that are in our communities now, particularly for the younger folks. The clear direction on this is what this is, here's what the goals and objectives, and again, going back to Brother Malcolm, that's what he was establishing in talking about Black nationalism, what it was, what it represented, what some of the goals and objectives were, etc. He talked about self-defense, he talked about, you know, and was putting these things in place to do. So now, with us today, where are our, again, the plans of action that are clear for our people? You see, now, of course, recently, I think a week or so ago, there was a group that had a conference, and of course, Dr. Jeffries and Professor Small and a few, Dr. Karanga, they were part of the HAPPY conference, which was, of course, focusing on economics. Okay, so there, of course, was kind of a plan, or at least presentations to give people, you know, some information and so forth, with the intention of developing a program, for lack of a better word, particularly for that area of interest. Again, that group, you know, one of their fortes was or is economics. Economic development. So
and Professor Small mentioned that. Small
right.
mentioned that
but
today
saying,
when he was speaking.
Okay. But I'm saying, you know, we have to begin to examine where are these things in our communities that are on a regular, ongoing basis, and that's clear, that has some very concise modes of operations. This is what has to be developed. This is what's lacking, because again, particularly when I'm talking to young folks, they're looking to be involved in some things, but unfortunately get caught up in other people's stuff, because that's what's clear, concise, and has a plan of action.
Well, Sister Fillet, in the Dominican, well, in Washington Heights,
mm-hmm.
as we speak, in Washington Heights and in Harlem, everybody else can open up businesses. Washington Heights businesses belong to the Dominican community. It's restaurants up there, sneaker stores. Them gangsters up there know how to wash money. They wash money, and those people up there own them businesses. So they maneuver like that. We haven't understood a Bumpy Johnson. We take the names of all these gangsters, then we don't do what they did. If Bumpy Johnson was studied, the money that was given to open up businesses, they washed drug money up in Washington Heights and
yes.
open up legitimate businesses. We have did it through Bumpy Johnson and the old gangsters. But the new ones have yet to understand that. All them people up in Washington Heights. But in Harlem, other people own the businesses because we don't know what to do with the illegal money we make. We don't know how to wash it like they did in the old days.
So
the old gangsters knew how to wash money.
Right.
We haven't studied yet.
Go ahead, Brother Mike.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, the point that Ray Ray is making, because after we left the ceremony, we did as we usually do. We go to one of the only black businesses on 125th Street, the Uptown Juice Bar, which is black owned and operated.
That's
and
right.
That brother
right.
there normally, I've gone there with Dr. Jeffries, and we will sit down and enjoy a meal. And when it's time to pay for it, the brother says, no. You know, y'all go ahead. As a matter of fact, here, take this with you. And will give us, whether it's beverages or some extra food or something to take home. And we go there because it's literally one of two, maybe, black businesses on 125th Street from river to river, from east side to the west side. So we do that as a statement to support black business. And so it's true what Ray Ray says, that there are certain other communities, and I'm not isolating just Dominicans, because Italian gangsters have always
do the same
put
thing.
Their money into other so-called legal businesses. And white people that sell drugs every day on Wall Street have legitimate businesses.
Exactly.
They wear suits and ties. They're not labeled as drug dealers. There are plenty of billionaires who would lose a whole lot of assets if this drug game ever ended. If there was real prosecution for people that were involved in the drug game. So I'm just saying that we need a real political education as well as a cultural education. So to have one without the other is just... Maybe you could have historians intellectualizing, but if you've ever heard Dr. Amos Wilson speak, it will change. It is literally life-changing. If you've heard Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, to hear her speak, it is literally life-changing. If you internalize the message, that those are two of the most brilliant people that I've ever met. And both of them were working on our minds to make us better Africans. And they were the best at it, bar none.
Amos Wilson opened up Harlem office supplies with little bit of money.
Well, it wasn't supported the way it should have been.
Then it was not supported, because at one time on 125th Street and in Brooklyn and in Philly, black folks had businesses. It's not like
well,
we
see,
never
and
had
I
it,
guess
but
that's, yeah,
you would
that's
make it think that we
I'm
never had
making.
Nothing. You will
right.
never make it. You never. They will never make you. They will make you think that we that have been here, that have opened the doors and paved the way, that we never had businesses. I heard Philly had businesses all over the place. They had businesses in Harlem. Livingston's restaurant that Amos used to go eat. The ladies' living room was the restaurant, and it was packed. 126th Street off Madison Avenue.
Right, right. So, again,
but you would think that,
that
we never
something...
had it, Sister Filet. You think that we never had a business nowhere.
I get it. I think the point that I'm making, Brother Ray Ray, is we've made these assessments. And like you said, you mentioned Bobby Johnson and others. We're looking at a time span. And we're making these assessments and analysis. My point is, after doing, what are we talking about now doing, putting in place, given that this is what's happening and this is what has happened and so forth and so on? Before responding to that, I just want to go back to Brother Malcolm for one moment on the topic of black nationalism. And I'm saying this because here we have someone 57 years ago saying these things. And I'm saying for today, where are we hearing and seeing some plans of action that, you know, will map these things out? Given the fact that we've made these assessments, we know what the Dominicans are doing, we know what the Koreans are doing, we know what the Jews are doing, we know what all these people are doing, yet where are we talking about doing? But hold that thought for one moment.
Once you change your philosophy, you change your thought pattern. Once you change your thought pattern, you change your attitude. Once you change your attitude, it changes your behavior pattern. And then you go on into some action. As long as you got a sit-down philosophy, you'll have a sit-down thought pattern. And as long as you think that old sit-down thought, you'll be in some kind of sit-down everywhere. It's not so good to refer to what you're going to do as a city. Then right there, castrate you. Right there, it brings you down. What goes with it? What think of the image of someone sitting? An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up.
So now, as you said, we've made these analogies. We've done these assessments. We know what's going on. I'm saying again, we are not challenging ourselves, one another, our groups and organizations who we know have brilliant minds. Brother Mike just talked about it. And, of course, the great Dr. Amos Wilson, the great Dr. Francis Quest Wellstein, certainly they gave us information. So I'm saying now, with those things said, how are we now applying? And I'm not talking about individually, because certainly, you know, and needless to say, I know both of you and others in our circle, we are. But at the same time, things are getting worse, obviously. And now with the economy the way that it is, the question has to be, what is our plan of action, or at least potentially, or at least, you know, possibly? Where is it at?
Mike, who remember when we was driving up today, Mike? Remember we was talking about Kermit Eady and the Black United Front, how the system,
yeah, I remember him.
The system tore that organization down. And the other young lady that was taking care of the AIDS kids, the system
Mother
tore
hell.
That success down.
Yep.
It's
yep.
the system
mm-hmm.
and those gatekeepers.
Right. And the same person who took them both down, that was New York State Attorney General Vacco.
Right.
under orders from gatekeepers. Two organizations that did a good deed. I mean, Kermit Eady was unifying the dollars. He was getting
I remember him.
Housing, low-income housing, truly low-income housing for people that could not afford the high rates, especially in Harlem. The Mitchell Amis housing, things like that. And, of course, it goes without saying the contribution of the great Mother Hale, what she was doing for so-called crack babies and adopting. They got moved on because the political system does not allow no good deed goes unpunished.
Now,
so they went after them in plain sight. And so even though in this particular case it was a Republican, the Democrats stood by and let it happen. So Kermit Eady got put out of business, and Mother Hale was put out of business. And because it happened with VACO, somehow we under the false impression that Republicans are the worst, and somehow a Democratic liberal platform is our safety net. And it's not.
Now, it's not working. Let me ask you a question. Amos used to always, if they bring us up, who will take our place? If the success of the African American comes up, then who would have to be on the bottom? Because the Jews would always say, and Mackey would say this, better them than us. So who's going to be on the lower class if we move up, as they say, moving on up? They have always crushed it. They have always crushed it, the system.
Well,
who will take our place as the underclass? Would it be the Mexican?
When Sister Empress is saying something, and it sounds simplistic on the surface, what's the plan? Even though I'd be the first to admit, there's no the plan, but there are plans. There are things. I mean, the most fundamental thing you could do is to preserve yourself, your family, your community, your existence. If we cannot muster a system to protect our women, Malcolm was saying that the black woman is unprotected and disrespected. He's right. It was true when he said that in the 60s, and it's true now.
It is true today.
Black women are still disrespected. And so
I believe the whole race is unprotected and disrespected.
Yeah, but the women more so, because one thing that the white man always does, if whether it's in the form of NATO, when they go into African countries or black countries, or whether in the Caribbean or whether it's in Africa or whether local military or paramilitary agencies, police departments go into black areas, they have always raped black women. It has always been permissible. So, the French is known for that, you know, what they've done in Africa and other places. When they go in, they rape men too. But men raping men. So I would just say that it's kind of hard when the question is raised about what's the plan. So this convention is coming up. I wouldn't be too hard on them as long as they can do some workable things, as in what Gary, to come out of Gary and say unity without uniformity is good, because we don't all have to agree on everything, just some basic things. So when we talk about things like, well, what are we naming ourselves? Do we agree with the name? If we call ourselves Africans, we don't really much need anything else. I mean, whatever goes with that or whatever prefaces that or comes behind that is not a major thing to argue. But I'm just saying that the most fundamental basic thing we have is our right to self-defense. Now, jobs and all that stuff can come later, but if we can't protect our women and we can't protect babies, I mean, if you looked at the last community cop we did, we talked about how an 8-year-old little child, a male child,
cop
was treated,
man-handled.
You know, I don't know if you all saw it, by three grown men, police officers. They snatched him off a bike in Syracuse and proceeded to lock him up. But because the community, it was at least one black man who stood there and raised the salient question. What are y'all doing? Why y'all treat him that way, an 8-year-old child? He raised the just the same way it was a black man that saw George Floyd with the knee on his neck and said, what are you doing? You're killing him. And he wasn't afraid while everybody else was quiet. Well, this
and
young
Ramsey
man
Order, said, Ramsey Order wasn't afraid neither.
Yeah, he took the pictures and stuff of, you know, what happened in Staten Island. So in this recent case that just happened in Syracuse, here you got this 8-year-old boy being manhandled over allegedly a bag of potato chips that they claim he took out of a store. And I don't care what a little 8-year-old white child does, he's not going to be handled that way. If they handle him at all, it's just going to be to take him to his parents. Only because this black man made so much noise and people were videotaping it with the, you know, with their phones, that the police think twice, and ultimately, instead of taking him to a detention center or to the precinct to be booked by central booking, they decided instead we better just take him home because there's too much heat on us now. And so even Governor Hochul, she saw, and if you watch the community cop, you see even she said, this got to be investigated. Something about this ain't right. Now,
that.
Governors don't normally say that, but she has to say something because she needs the black vote. So even
mm-hmm.
she admitted
so she wanna get re-elected.
They should not have handled him like that.
Well,
whether he took the potato chips or not. It's not even important.
Well, Sister Filet, yes. Let me ask you a question once again.
Yes.
With your team and our extended family from Brooklyn to Philly,
mm-hmm.
with all the good
mm-hmm.
people in Philly that do that unrelenting work, with information, what if y'all didn't do it?
Well,
That's the start, and the fight is the start. You're talking about the building. You're talking about it. It is some businesses in Philly that's starting, that's trying. It is businesses in New York that's trying. This scamdemic and everything that done killed so many. I would go to the community board meetings and see. But I would vote. I would just raise my voice to say, don't give them no license to sell the white man's poison. Only because I'm a member of the 12-step program now. But
right.
I have seen the community board. I could break my anonymity, but if I was on the other side of the tracks and somebody was trying to open up a business where they're selling that stuff, of course you would want the license. They would give some black folks businesses to sell food, but when that COVID came, all them businesses folded. Now, the guy that we was talking to at the vegan spot, He got a spot in Brooklyn.
He got a spot in Brooklyn.
The food is excellent. And he was telling Mike how he went over there, and now he got a, we were sitting in there. He's going to be selling that same, that food on Halsey Street. So he got it, and he said due to the pandemic, he got a good price on the spot. The food speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. So,
but they ain't gonna say the success of that. That's gonna be undercover. That's not gonna be put out on the success of black business. Tompkins Avenue used to be the biggest drug den. Dope all over the place on Tompkins Avenue. So you do have some independent black folks. They paying rent, but they trying. Now the white folks are getting money all over the place.
So, Brother Ray, here's the point that I'm making and saying and will continue to say. You're absolutely correct, you and Brother Mike both. We're in 2022. So, as Brother Mike said, as black people, as African people, we're going to always have certain things. Just like that spirit of Brother Malcolm, the kind of courage and tenacity of black men, that's going to exist regardless of whatever. It's a given.
Right.
It's us, right? So everything that's been said about the businesses, we're going to always have some businesses. We're going to always have this, that's just us. However, what I'm saying is we are in the 21st century now. So based on we're able to examine history in a way that has never been able to be done before, at least for the most part. We have access to getting information and being able to critique it and digest it and dissect it like never before. So now, with all of that, here we are today. And look at what we're saying. We have no schools that's independent for the most part, a few here and there. But I'm saying we're in the 21st century. We're not even educating our children, most of us. And I'm not talking about the masses. I'm saying we've got to start looking at this stuff in a little more critical and realistic way and then begin to make some other determination. For example,
right, you're 100% right. When the Arabs come here, they open up their own schools.
So this is what I'm saying. We've got to say this is what we're going to do, or at least attempt to do, because we're talking about these things, but it's almost like, okay, for example, I went to an event today, And the brother, he's a UNIA brother, because we got three different groups of UNIA here in Philly. So this was one of the groups of the UNIA. And so, he was saying we just got to come together. I'm like, brother, you of all people have some kind of concepts of plans, because you're talking about the Honorable Marcus Garvey. So y'all study this really, really intensively. So don't say to me, we got to just come together. What is your plan or program to do that? And you know what? He could not respond to that question. And so I said to him, I said, you know what? Come September, we're going to have a school. If we just have five students, we're going to have an independent school in this city or some kind of independent educational whatever for the children. He said, well, why wait until September? I said, because nobody else has stood up or acted like they wanted to do that. So he said to me, you can use my building. But if I had not said what I said, I would have never even known he had a building.
Never known he had a building.
Right. But I'm saying, you see what I'm saying? We have to begin to question and challenge some things a little more, I'm telling you, because this is just getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and it's not just our unnatural enemy that we always had. We already know what that's about. That ain't nothing changing. Ain't nothing going to change with that. But what are we doing in terms of us to in the 21st century? No, now that's why I'm saying not from 50 years ago. We can't talk about, well, this is what happened 50 years ago. Well, yeah, it did. But in 2022, how is that advanced in real time? We have to really examine this, because something, I'm telling you, something is really going awry, and I ain't talking about just what we know in terms of the devil. We already know that what that stuff is. You know. You already know. I mean, we ain't got to talk about that. We already know. The devil's trying to destroy us.
Well, look, when we had the summer before last, when we had a sister, Jennifer McLaughlin, this sister was being harassed. She was a single mother, and she was being harassed in Nassau County by a white police officer.
I remember.
And his son, right there in Nassau County, truth be told, I could look at it and say, well, all the people was at the Malcolm grave site, I didn't see none of them out there.
It wasn't this location, Sister Filet, was not right. Deep into Nassau County. This was Nassau County, Queens borderline.
Right. It was right outside of Queens.
Right outside of Queens.
Right.
And so there are people, and I'm not throwing shade on them, but there are people that'll be at things like that. But they're not going to be there for Jennifer McLaughlin.
Right.
They're not going to even mention it. But we were out there as soon as we heard that they were harassing a single black mother.
Right.
We knew what to do. So
right.
Even though I don't too much get into what's the plan, damn it, we know what to do when a black woman is in trouble, when the white man is harassing her the same way they harass Frances Quest Welsing and black people in D.C. didn't do a damn thing for her.
And now she's no longer with us. But, Mike, tell her the real deal. Them gatekeepers told them. Now, she went to Florida. You know she's gone, right?
Yeah, she's gone.
She's gone.
Wow.
The sad part about it, Sister Filet, and Mike could tell you, the gatekeepers pushed the grassroots people out of the mix.
Right.
Yeah, Sharpton and Crump came in on it. When they went to work on it, when they saw we had 4,000 people out there at a rally.
Right.
Oh, they were coming in to put the fire out.
They put the fire out.
Which shows you what their real role is.
Yeah, that's what they do. We know that. That's what they do.
Dismissed everybody.
We know that that's what they do. That's why I'm saying the trickery is nothing new. Do you brothers remember a few years ago? When Little Wayne, here's a perfect example, right before our eyes, Little Wayne had this horrible lyric in one of his raps or whatever, talking about Emmett Till. And we had, at that point, Emmett Till's first cousin was on. She's an ancestor now, Sister Erica. And so, again, no one was at that particular time talking about what was going on with this horrible lyric that Lil Wayne. She comes on our radio program, and we start blowing it up. We talk with the family. We're talking about a boycott of PepsiCo and Mountain Dew and all of that. That thing started growing and growing. The next thing I know, here comes Sharpton. So I'm saying we already know what they're going to do. If our people are weak,
most of us don't know, though. Most of us don't know.
Well, the ones that the folk that deal with movement stuff, and that's who I'm referring to saying certain things specifically about us, meaning folks that, you know a little something, do some things or whatever. So my point is, are we preparing accordingly? Because, see, once you kick my butt, I'm taking that lesson. You got me that time. But listen, from that point on, I'm going to remember what happened, and so I'm going to plan accordingly. See, with a backup plan. So my point is, we keep going through this stuff as if we don't know that these niggas going to
do this. And over and
so
over.
So I'm saying we have
over.
To examine some things ourselves because
over
we know
and over again,
how they operate. And you all, of course, know Philly is the home of the Boule. Philly
right.
is the home of the Boule.
That's the headquarters.
So their little antics here, not to say it's any different anywhere else, but they definitely got a different kind of flavor. Trust me.
No, that's
but
the
I'm
home,
saying,
so you know it. That's the home.
Right, it's the home, right. So I'm saying once you know these things, you then have to deal with some responsibility of dealing with it accordingly or not. And that's why now I'm saying to folks in Philly, what are you really trying to do? Because some of this stuff is fake and phony. And it's just that simple. And here's the bottom line. What are folks supporting? This one sister said, oh, Sister Blake, you know, I'm one of your biggest supporters. I said, you are? In what way? And when I and she couldn't answer. She couldn't answer. She said, yeah, I'm a big supporter. Oh, you are? So what? Tell me, what does that transform into? Translate into?
She didn't
write.
$2 Tuesday. Did she say $2 Tuesday?
She couldn't answer that. No, she didn't even
did
do it. But I'm saying, I'm going to ask people now, what does that mean? And
she didn't even say $2 Tuesday. She's your biggest supporter.
She couldn't even say $2 Tuesday. So I'm saying we're letting people get away with stuff. And I'm not saying to be, you know, rude or, you know, to be confrontational.
You could be
I'm
rude.
Not
you could be rude.
I'm just saying folks are doing things because we're not either strategically creating the situation that says, for example, people here in Philly, I say to them, what do you do to help Mumia? See, I ask these questions. I mean, when you say you are about certain things, then, you know, if we're at a social location, I ask them, oh, by the way, you know, Mumia's crowd coming up. So what have you done lately or whenever? You see, because I already know the answer. I already know the answer.
Well,
so
look,
now it makes people kind of, you know, operate a little differently when they know that you not only are watching, but that you have the capability to kind of, you know, discreetly indicate that you're fronting.
Well, Sister Filet, if it is the home of the Boule and we only an hour and a half away from you, we in second place.
Well, it might be sort of the birth of the Boule, but the Boule is strong in New York. The Boule is strong in D.C. The Boule is strong in Atlanta, New York, and D.C.
So,
but I'm saying again, brothers, what are we going to do? See, I'm saying again, that's why now I'm putting stuff in place. I don't care if it's 2, 3, 4 people. We're going to do this because we know how these folks operate. And for us to just, you know, just talk about how they operate and
look,
not develop
right.
what we need what? To develop, you see. So that's kind
look,
of where
every,
I'm at. This is family. Go ahead, Brother Mike. We're going to get ready to close out. I'm going to give you and Brother Mike.
Yeah,
I'm
saying every day we'll get people say, well, you know, we need some independent politics. We got to have some black politics. They say that knowing full well that if we do the Freedom Party again, they're going to move on us
right.
again. They are paid
right.
assassins to move on. These are Democrats now. That are paid
right.
to destroy the Freedom Party.
Right.
And it wasn't Sharpton by itself,
wow.
even though he has a network.
Right.
It was Sharpton and others, and I'll put it that way.
Right. I know. I get it. Well, I have no qualms with saying this, and Brother Mike, I'll be calling you and 100 Blacks, those who are interested in consulting with us, because myself and a couple other brothers, we're getting ready to put together one of our LLCs. And see, again, when I know certain things, when I actually literally understand, then I'm going to develop what I need to deal with to respond. So with that said, we'll be calling on you, Brother Mike, to consult with us, because we're going to be establishing several LLCs, and one of them is going to be our security and investigation agency. It'll be an LLC, though. And in that way, we are able to hire people, because you got a lot of different stores and other kinds of things that hire, private security. You see? And so, again, it's a business, but that ain't all. And I'm going to leave it at that. You see what I'm saying?
Have you heard about or are you planning on, these are questions I really shouldn't ask you publicly, but I don't know what your level of participation is going to be in this 50-year anniversary, this Black political convention that's going to be held in Newark in a few months.
Well, I'll say this. Because again,
you don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
Oh no, I do want to.
Okay.
See, normally I'm not invited to these types of things. I am on one of the planning committees. When I get information, I don't get the information regularly for the meetings. I've been down that road before too, but I am on one of the committees. And again, it's a struggle. It's a real struggle because, I'm not one for unnecessary, smooth talking and soap socking and all of that. So I do plan to be involved, but I also plan to hold a parallel session.
Okay. Say no more. Say more than that.
And here's one of the key reasons. I did attend the one in Gary, the last one that they had for the anniversary, which I think was like 20, oh, gosh, I don't remember. It was the 40th year or something like that. So I did attend that, and I did speak at that. Now, the person who I met, who we continue to have a relationship, was Senator Owens. I don't know if you remember Senator Owens. Beautiful brother.
Okay.
He was one of the first to introduce legislation for reparations through the Senate, and this was like in the 80s. I thought the first one was
what's his name, the congressman from Detroit,
out of Detroit.
Conyers sent it through the congressional level. I'm talking about through the Senate level in Boston. This was Owens. I didn't know it either. But my point is, so he was real radical. He was like someone like the brother that you talk about from New York, the congressman. Owens was kind of like that. He made transition last year.
Like Adam Powell.
Right. He was kind of like Adam Clayton Powell. And so when I went to Gary for the anniversary that they did in Gary, the last one, that's when I met him. And we stayed in contact up to the time of his death almost. So I'm saying that was some serious folk for that one. Now, I'll say this because, I can, and that is the political mentality of various folks today is very different from that time period. The mere fact that people want to use pronouns.
Right.
A lot of folks that are on these committees, they use these pronouns. I'm
okay.
Leaving it at that.
All right,
well,
you know, anyway.
Yeah.
You say, what are we doing? But you just gave two examples on what Blog Talk Radio and Sister Empress is doing, so that sounds good to me.
Well, it is, but again, I'm putting myself in the position to be held accountable. You see, I don't have a problem with saying that because, you know, when you're true to what you're doing or what you're trying to do, then, you know, it goes with the territory. And I'm just really suggesting to folks that we got to step this thing up. It can't just be the observations. And we do that. We have to do that, obviously. But we got to start coming up with some other, you know, approaches and methodologies and whatever because, again, we have younger folks coming in that are totally confused because, you know, there's not the clarity of what some of us are talking about. It's not there, and we have to change that. See, or Black Lives Matter will continue to be the
driving force.
Right. You know, and well, I know we're up against, you know, I know we're up against the big boys or the big machine and all of that, but I'm still saying again that we are still not doing, like I said, people here in Philly now, I really asked them, the ones who said a cultural or conscious or whatever, I just asked a simple question. What do you support that's self-determined? See, just
right.
That one question. We'll tell you right then and there what you're really dealing with. What do you support that is, if you're not doing it yourself, which is okay, but what do you support that's self-determined? That's Black self-determination. And if they can't answer that question, you done told me everything I need to know.
True.
See? Really? I mean, and we have to, you know, begin to evaluate what are we trying to do and in what framework, you know, what types of things are we looking at that is either, you know, fundamental, you know. And, again, some of the stuff has to be clear. And going back to Brother Malcolm, that's a couple of the things that he made very clear, as he said, make it plain. And that was to do for self and self-defense. He made that explicitly clear. And that's what he was working on up to the time of his death. See? And so, you know, anyway, let me go back to my brothers and get their closing comments, and then we're going to close this session out and move right along. So, Brother Ray Ray, give me your closing comments, and then we'll have Brother Mike to close it out.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having the program, and today was a good day. We made it out there again, me, Mike, Brother Raji, Mackie's group, it was people there. And the fight continues.
Yes.
And, you know, I asked one question. In honor of Malcolm, I sure would want to know what his statement is on this vac on the scandemic, and I don't think he will have been endorsing it, even though.
No.
So.
No, I don't believe so either, Brother Ray Ray.
So
all
the fight
right,
is on,
Brother
and it's
Mike.
Gonna get rough. But you know, you don't have to do this for later. You can like say, well, you know something. I don't think I'm doing Blog Talk. I think I just stay home and watch Netflix.
No, well, see, that's the difference. That's why, Brother Ray,
you don't
Ray,
have to do
you
it,
know,
but
I,
you do.
I, this is no, I do because I know thyself. See, that's what I'm saying. That's the difference. Oops, hold up. That's the difference. Yeah. I know thyself. So again, this is what I say to people. I ask people, why are you here? Right? I mean, in general conversation, I'm talking to someone, we having some dialogue. I'll ask them, why are you here?
I don't mean like, you know, right here at this moment. Why are you here? You see?
Mm-hmm.
And that conversation, just little answers like that lets me know whatever kind of conversation do I need to have with you or not. See? So you're right, Brother
right.
Jerry, I could be doing something else, but not really, because I know thyself. I know why I'm here on this planet, period. That's different. That's different.
Well, a lot of people would wish this day wouldn't come because all over the grassroots come out, and we still do what we got to do, little by little.
Yeah, well. We got to do more and a little better and, you know, not wait. But I know you know that, Brother Mike know that. But I'm saying as I now engage with people, you know, these are things that I'm saying to them because if I don't, who will? If you don't, who will? If Brother Mike don't, who will? You see, that's
right.
What I'm saying.
That's right.
But Brother Mike, your closing comment.
Yeah, I'll just say that it was a beautiful day. But if we don't take this day and it translate into something much more tangible, then it's all for naught. If we cannot protect our women and children, it's all for naught. And so we're supposed to be made better by the examples of those that preceded us. And we're standing on their shoulders. As I said, two of the greatest minds that I've ever heard is Dr. Francis Quest Welsing and Dr. Amos Wilson.
That's
two of the greatest. Amos and actually Ray knows Amos much better than I did. But Amos was criticized because at one point to dramatize his points how to fight white supremacy, he said, look, man, you know, you got to put those pyramids to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Which put him at variance. That put him at variance with the First World Alliance. So and I won't name them, but all of these incredible orators, historians, they kind of like outed him, sort of.
Because
once he said, you know, put those pyramids off to the side, even though contextually it's important. But we in the projects now. We ain't in the pyramids. And believe me, that put him at variance with a lot of big names that I won't even get into.
And they were still paying rent. First World was still paying rent, and it was abandoned buildings all over Harlem.
Well, that's a side issue. I'm just saying that when somebody is bold enough to tell you, there is a time and place where you got to put them pyramids on the side
and
stop talking about Hatshepsut and Akhenaten and all this and what we doing now.
Right.
So
that's
that kind of like put them at variance with certain people who I love.
Sure.
But, you know, those are the facts. So in any event, you know, we have to do better. We have to be made better. And so I'll use the words of Dr. John Henry Clark to close, Pan-Africanism or perish.
All right. All right, family. Well, we will continue tomorrow night. We'll be on Zoom with Malcolm X Weekend, and we're going to go more deeply into some of the concepts and ideas that we talked about tonight. And again, suggest that folks come with some suggestions, some plan to action or whatever. I mean, we got to have those kinds of conversations too. So we'll be back tomorrow night. I want to thank Brother Mike, of course, for coming in and sharing about today's activity, of course, the annual pilgrimage to the gravesite. Oh, before you go, Brother Mike, usually, and I know the answer to this, but just to share with the family, of course, Dr. Khaled is also buried at the same cemetery.
Yes.
And there are a few others. So usually, you know, folks also go and, you know, give their prayers and blessings as well. So I just want to mention that. I think also, was it Paul Robeson is there?
Yes.
Okay. You can do
a roll call with the people that are there. Paul Robeson is there. Other members mm-hmm. of Malcolm's family, of course, Malcolm's wife, Sister Betty Shabazz is there.
Mm-hmm.
And especially people who love her music. Sister Aaliyah is there.
So
it's a whole lot. So it's a lot of people there.
Okay, great. All right, family. Well, listen, we're going to close out. And, of course, our regular program, Saturday, 10:30, we will be black. Y'all going to love Saturday. Brother Mike, Brother Ray Ray, we got Brother Omawali Africa will be joining us on Saturday. So we've been in touch like almost every day this week. So he will be definitely coming in on Saturday. And, give us some clarity on what happened here in Philly. And, of course, he travels all over the country. But we want to specifically, of course, focus on him leaving the Dr. Malefi Asante's Afrocentricity International. And he'll talk about some of the other work that he's working on as well. So, again, Saturday, 10:30 p.m. will be one of the conversations. And, of course, we'll also talk more about Brother Malcolm. And remember Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. It was released on May 21st, 1971. But, again, we want to kind of combine and show how some of this stuff is connected. That's why we're talking with Brother Mike and Brother Ray Ray again. Listen, Marvin Gaye, 1971, was saying what's going
on.
But they held
What's Going On for at least a year in the vault.
No doubt. Yep, that's why I'm saying it was released that year, but they definitely had it. And they would not give him the Grammy or anything for it or any recognition, which, you know, again,
that's okay.
Is probably
long as we know, that's probably the best album ever made.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's what I was saying. That's why we're going to highlight it on Saturday. All right, family, listen, we're going to close out. And, of course, with that said, we're going to leave out with the words of Brother Malcolm X. Again, I want to remind everyone, Brother Mike, you can catch Brother Mike with Community Cop on YouTube. Brother Ray Ray, I know you'll be posting. Did you already post yesterday's already?
No,
for the
not
Mackie?
Yet.
Okay. So, family, that will be coming up. But there's certainly others on YouTube as well that you can go and check out. And, of course, you can always check out Sister Keisha with Thorough Black Talk. Again, all on YouTube. Okay. All right, family, again, we thank everyone for tuning in. And we're going to close out with Brother Malcolm X, El Haj Malik, El Shabazz. We love him always. And like Brother Mike just said, it can't just be about today. We got to look at what things did Brother Malcolm teach us that we need to make certain we continue in this day and age. Until next time, it's out.
When we look like the other parts of this earth upon which we live, we find that black, brown, red, and yellow people in Africa and Asia are getting their independence. They're not getting it by singing, "We Shall Overcome." No, they're getting it through nationalism. It is nationalism that brought about the independence of the people in Asia. Every nation in Asia gained its independence through the philosophy of nationalism. Every nation on the African continent that has gotten its independence brought it about through the philosophy of nationalism. And it will take black nationalism that to bring about the freedom of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country where we have suffered colonialism for the past 400 years. America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it. What is 20th, what do you call second-class citizenship? Why, that's colonization. Second-class citizenship is nothing but 20th century slavery. How are you going to tell me you're a second-class citizen? They don't have second-class citizenship in any other government on this earth. They just have slaves and people who are free. Well, this country is a hypocrite.
They try and make you think they set you free by calling you a second-class citizen. No, you're nothing but a 20th century slave. Just as it took nationalism to move to remove colonialism from Asia and Africa, it'll take black nationalism today to remove colonialism from the backs and the minds of the 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country. Looks like it might be the year of the ballot or the vote.